Good evening. We'd like to welcome everyone to our regular monthly school board meeting for JCSD 1. Would you all please stand with me and say the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, it's been a month since we've been together, and a lot has happened during that time, and we want to thank everyone for taking time out of their busy schedules and to attend this meeting, either in person or streaming. We just ended homecoming week for KC, and we're now into homecoming week for Buffalo, so it's a busy, busy time for our kids and for our teachers and our principals. We appreciate everybody being here tonight. And cell phones, if always, if you need to take a call, would you please step out, or if you get a call, roll call. We have Mary, Don, and Mr. Rickett, and Jody on today for personal reasons. Do we have any public comment? Ms. Sanchez, do we have any public comment?
We do not.
Okay, thank you.
I'll save this for my report.
Okay, sounds great. May I have a motion to accept the agenda as presented?
So moved.
Second.
All those in discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passed. Okay, we're on to general reports. And our first one is the JCSD 1 student video.
Thank you.
Great video. Mr. Oskey, I don't know if this is the proper time, but Lisa Norman needs to get some special recognition for her work on the Brighton Road and all the people. We have so many people here involved with it.
I think that's the right time. I'll talk about it in mine, but I'll talk about it now. So the Wright Road was, there were volunteers in this community, well over 100 just on the day of the event, well over 160 total that took place at the high school. And if you didn't get an opportunity to experience it, I would encourage you next year to see what to come up and watch. It was fabulous. I mean, were there some hiccups? Yeah, there were some hiccups, things that we can do better and some things we'll work on for next year. But the organization of that was phenomenal. And to give her that credit, but I also want to give a shout out to what an amazing community this is to put the resources we had together in front of kids and to make a difference. So even on the hot day outside, it was a non-typical, at least it wasn't snowing, but there were good presentations all the way around, from the donations to the food to the, and the kids were good. Overall, the kids were good. So, we can improve on next year, but the reality, it was a great kickoff. So that was my point of view. Those of you that had an opportunity to attend, you can speak here today, but there were some good things.
I will say, I went to the mock accident, and I was at some of the other sessions, but you could have heard a pin drop. I mean, they were very attentive, and we had a young man also from, is he from the Honor Farm? Was he from the Honor Farm?
Yes.
And he made a huge impact on kids, and I thought that was awesome. Lynette, would you like to say anything, because you were there?
I'll echo exactly what Charles and Jim said. It was a great day. It was a great opportunity for our kids. And if we reached one child, then we did our job.
We also had a couple other people that were in attendance, so.
It was a hard day, too. It was emotional and hard that way. It's a lot to take in, even as an adult, so I think it was really a lot for the kids to take in and absorb, and they handled it very maturely and very well, and I'm always blown away seeing our students. It was pretty cool.
Randy, as a presenter?
I thought the presentation on darts was fantastic.
It's your favorite part.
This is probably my favorite thing that we do with school. And I think it's probably one of the most important things that we do, and the only thing that I can hope that we do better next year is have more of us law enforcement involved, and we had a ton, just because I think it normalizes that relationship.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I would agree with that. And just an extension of that is just that collaboration between not only law enforcement, but all the other emergency services that were there that day, and that collaboration piece. I want to extend that to our presentation this morning. Was due to the collaboration with local law enforcement and our presentation to DCI, which was, just a little more adult level compared to what Randy, just was a real eye-opener, and it still just fascinates me that, and scares the heck out of me, is the probably appropriate word to say, the stuff that's out there, and it's pretty scary. In addition to that, we all walked to school on Wednesday. If you didn't have an opportunity to do that, you should have joined. People had their sneakers on, people were keeping up with the pace, but law enforcement was there. I mean, just not only the teachers and the kids and the walk to school day, but we had law enforcement on the road, making sure kids were getting there safely, and it was just a great environment. So there's some really cool things happening in Johnson County due to the great people that were here. So
I also thought the internet safety, that was totally eye-opening to me. I mean, he was talking about the 12 most dangerous websites. I had only heard of two of them. The kids all know them, but I know of two. So that was very good. All right, let's move on to our principal reports, Ms. Roski.
All right, well, we're going to start off with the spotlight with the Cloud Peak Elementary. So, Craig, I want to put you guys on the spotlight.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Great to be here. Just echo the things about the collaboration of the community. And so we're going to talk a little bit about Camp Roberts, which Jamie can help me out here, 5 or 6 years?
At least six. I'm pregnant with Ari, and she's 5 years.
Okay, so there you go. It happened as a group of fifth grade teachers got together, and TJ Tavigi, who was the program director at the Sheridan Y, who runs Camp Roberts, wanted to know how we could get more involved, or not more involved, but get this school to camp concept rolling. And so it's grown and it's shrunk. But we feel like we've maybe found a pretty good approach to offer this outside of the classroom approach, where we're still really addressing the things that are happening in our science class primarily, but also we do some writing up there. And so Jamie's here representing the fifth grade team, and they put together a little slideshow. And before she does, Becky Qualm couldn't be here, and she's really kind of the driving force behind Camp Roberts. That's just the way she does things. She collaborates with Game and Fish and BLM and the Forest Service and the engineers in town, and always bringing those local experts into the classroom to share what life outside of school could look like. So, anyway, go ahead.
Okay. So, you can go to the next slide. When we first started camp, we were kind of going through a kind of rotation type thing where two of the classes came up and then two of the classes came up. And we decided to make it so the whole fifth grade is up there at the same time. And this is the whole fifth grade, including Casey. And what we loved about that is that it's at the beginning of the year, and it's giving the teachers and the students an opportunity to build those relationships right off the bat. And so we work with these kids, and we get to meet the entire fifth grade. And so when you get back to school, you can walk by and say, good morning, so-and-so, good morning. And you know everybody and have those lasting relationships right away. Becky is awesome because she brings in all of these people. She has relationships with the Game and Fish, the BLM. She brought in the STEM people from Casper. Do you remember?
Science Zone,
yes. And so they put up these awesome learning centers for the kids to rotate to. And so this one is the Game and Fish, and they brought in skulls and furs and talked about some of the adaptations that animals make to live here and how they survive and how you recognize different types of animals. And so... mixed in with that, with the learning stations, there's activity stations, which are really cool because they really work with kids to develop grit and growth mindset. There's getting kids out of the box and trying things that they've never tried before. Half the time they're like, I've never been in a kayak. I don't think I want to do it. And then you can't get them out of the kayak, or you can't get them off the climbing wall. And so it's really cool to see kids go from, I don't want to be outside all day, to, I don't want to go home. And so just having them experience something that they wouldn't get to experience with their families. Oh, yeah, they did some kayak races. That was fun. They were going. Yeah. So Becky does a really, really nice job of connecting the activities to our science standards, and then she's able to come back and build upon the learning that they've started. So all these kids have these shared experiences that they can build with their using their schema to learn about then in the science classroom. They've got vocabulary that they touched and is tangible, and now she's using them in the classroom, and we use them as fifth grade teachers in our writing and even technology, as kids build newsletters about camp and use the pictures and work with the things that they did up on the mountain. And so this was a really cool activity that the Science Zone brought in. They brought in recyclable material, and the kids had to work together to build a boat that would hold their bodies. And then if you go to the next slide, they tested their boats. And this is the boat that nobody thought would work, and it ended up winning. And she was so proud. It was so fun to watch her, because she was the only one who didn't have a partner. And so she did it and tested it and built it all by herself. And so it was just a really cool success story for her. And so that was awesome. And so one of the major studies they do with the, is it BLM that does the water study?
Soil conservation.
Oh, sorry, thank you. they go into Clear Creek and they collect microorganisms and draw them and write about them and study them. And then they come back down and collect them here at, across from the train park, and compare the different animals and decide if we have a healthy creek system and what kind of things are affecting the animals and the little insects that they created, and what can we do to keep the creek healthy. And so that's a really cool one, because they're able to continue that study when they get down here and then write about it. I said that. The learning activities are all mixed in. They did some insect studies, a lot of insects, a lot of studying our environment. So one of our other science standards is studying the movement of the planets and how the sun and earth have a relationship. And so we built sundials, and so the kids put a sundial in the ground, and then we put rocks around it to mark the shadows. And these kids' sundial got taken out by a mole. So it ruined their experiment. But it was really funny. They thought that was perfect for a camp science activity. This was such a cool station. I didn't know. This is my share. I didn't know that we had mammoth sites in Johnson County, and that people used to hunt them 2,000 years ago with atlatls. And so the kids learned some history about our state and then got to practice throwing atlatls. So that was really cool. They were all like, that was easy. And then they tried it, and it was so frustrating. And they kept trying, and they kept trying until we had like 3 kids hit the target.
Some of them said that they probably would go hungry. So anyway, I will agree. In observing and trying to throw that, there'd be a long time between the hunt.
Just need one.
I would say, get one. Each
one. You just know you're shaking one of them.
So I think the next slide has Mr. Raza. So we did a lot of nature journaling, and I think this was the center that had a lot of kids really far outside of their comfort zone, because Mr. Raza, he presented some really cool examples from Lewis and Clark in their journey, and he had real pages, but then the kids had to go and sit quietly in nature and write about what they see and hear and taste and smell, and they were like, I don't understand. We just sit here. And so it was just really cool to watch them start off like, there's nothing to write about, I don't see anything, to all of a sudden, oh, we found a bush with 600 butterflies in it, and look at these berries here by the lake, and we can write about that. And then kids were doing leaf engravings and sketches, and it just turned into something where they were really nervous and super outside of their comfort zone, to them loving that station and filling pages and pages with things that they found. It was fun to watch. This is an example of our daily schedule. And so we start by splitting the kids, not by classes, but just into groups, and so they're mixing with all the other fifth grade kids. And then they rotate through going from a science station to an activity to a science station, and so that kind of keeps them moving, gets their brains going, and then they get a little bit of a break and come back to it. And they rotate through all the stations in the 2 days that we're up there. And there's the second day. And then our thank you.
It's wonderful. Thank you for doing
it. Awesome. Do you spend the night up there, or do you go back and forth? How's that work?
We used to, and then funding.
No, it's just COVID. COVID happened, and so we weren't able to go the first year at all. And then the second, no, it would have been, so what was it, 20? 20 we didn't go. 21, we were planning to go spend the night, and then it was like, do we really want to have this many kids? We were taking them all up. We decided that the Y had purchased some big wall tents so we could have the boys outside in a big wall tent, the girls in the cabins, because we're just, you know, gentlemen. And I voted to be in the cabin, but I was outvoted. But, yeah, so we got to thinking, gosh, is that really what we want to do as we were trying to get back into school? Did we want to take the chance? Because we were still contact tracing. And that was right at the beginning that we thought, we're just not going to go there. And it's a lot. To ask and to get enough adults to go up there with that many fifth graders. So we've backed off, we've extended to two longer days, and that's what I was saying earlier. I think we maybe found where we need to be. We're giving them all the experiences that that school, the camp, except for that nighttime. And we did have a few kids that the anxiety, they've never stayed away from home.
The extended days makes it perfect. Because we don't get back till just about dinner time.
That worked really well.
Thank you.
So again, just those people that collaborated with us to do it is super important. A couple of things I just wanted to talk about in our building. I share down there the one, our performance report. It's a report full of a lot of opportunities for us. And then it listed just five things, I guess, that we're doing in the building currently, PD-wise, with staff, just to try to move us forward. The very last thing is what I'm really, really excited about right now. And we've talked for years about professional learning communities, and everybody should go and experience that. We talked this last week. I took a group, and I think if you ask the staff, I think if you ask parents, Cloud Peak Elementary is a good school. And there's that phrase of good is the enemy of great. And so that's what we're wanting to do right now. Is create a narrative about Cloud Peak Elementary that we are great. We have so many good people in our building, and we have hardworking kids, we have supportive families, and so that's where we want to go. We want to be great. So that's our challenge right now.
So can you kind of go through the handout for the school performance report? So the yellow portion. You have to go on the list.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you.
So there's, and I'll just, and this may or may not answer your question, but I'll, and Dr. Miller knows this stuff like crazy. But there's three main areas of the accountability report. Four, actually, if you count participation. So you have to have 95% of your kids participating to meet expectations. That's honestly not a hard target to meet. And so we met that. Achievement, so a certain percentage of our kids have to be proficient. Okay, so we met expectations and achievement. Growth, so that is, and this is where Steve has to, or Dr. Miller has to come in and help me out, but growth is how does, so kids take it the first time in third grade. So we don't get a growth score on third graders because they've only taken it once. So when they take it as a fourth grader, fifth grader, and so on up the road, there's a whole bunch of math and formulas and stuff that go into saying whether you have the right growth percentile or the targeted growth percentile. We met it for growth. So that's all the kids. The reason we're partially meeting expectations is in the equity category, and that's the kids that are in that lowest quartile of students. So that I think it's about the lowest 25% of students. Those are our kids that are basic and below basic, and some that are basic. We didn't grow those kids enough. So that's a challenge for us. That's an opportunity for us to change things. So that's kind of where we're focusing. The different PD opportunities up there that really will lead us to that is the letters training that we have a large number of K-5 staff taking part in. So that's basically the meat and potatoes of learning to read. Okay, all that goes into learning to read. I can't even, I'm drawing blank on what the other things were. If you think, Reading Horizons is another area that we're focused on. K-5. We 3 or 4 years ago we adopted the Faunus and Pinnell classroom. We believe that that's a strong model for us to use, but it doesn't meet everybody's needs. So there's some kids that we're not seeing growth. And was last year a third year in Faunus and Pinnell? Third year interrupted by COVID, and last year was really our first full year of it. And so we were out searching for a way that we can reach those kids. So that are struggling with LOI, which is our go-to intervention. So that's what the Reading Horizons piece is. And then Eureka Math Squared, we're due to really be looking at our math. We have Eureka Math right now. We're piloting Eureka Math Squared, I think, in 2 classrooms in each of my school, 2 or 3 out of KC, 2 at KC, and then all of second grade at Menlark. So it's about half of our kids are piloting Eureka Math Squared. Right now, the reports I'm getting from my staff is that, yes, it's a better approach than what we're seeing with Eureka. Time will tell, though, as we get down the road and we take a real good look at both groups. So, probably way more information than you
will. Thank you. I appreciate that.
So, Dr. Miller, why don't you bring back up that chart again?
So as he brings that up, Mr. Anderson, does that also include the special ed kids that are in your school?
Oh, absolutely. That's where. And I don't want to say that that's what our equity group is, but we get a list of kids that are equity kids. More of them are on it than are not. So yeah, you know, they're kids that they get specialized instruction because of the learning disability or some other things.
So if you scroll down. Just to help explain the board. So everybody sees the red right there. Just scroll up a little bit, down a little bit further. You're going to see that there's a chart there that says below 48, we're at 47. If we'd have been at 48 or above between that and 60, we would have been meeting target. So theoretically, they're right there on the edge of meeting target, all right, with the number of kids. So that's something to point out also, that they're right there on the board. This also helps explain, you know, it only takes one kid to make a difference, okay? One or two kids with where that is with that group. 37 out of 120, you'll see the count of 138 students. There's 127, and I'm assuming the equity piece is 37 students that are identified. So it's really close within that, and Craig and his staff have identified some great areas to look at those, but that's a really minimal margin. It could have went either way, but I just wanted to point that out. It's not like we're at the very bottom. They're right there on the edge of meeting.
But I like what Craig said, that you want to go from good to great. You just don't want to be good. You want to be great. And I appreciate that.
Absolutely. The board is. And Jan, I think as the chairman of the board, that's a great question, because this chart itself, if you just look at it, shows you the complexity of how we are rated. All right, this isn't just a simple score. There's a lot of things that go into how things are scored. I know Mr. Hansen's here. They're under review depending on size. There's just so many things that go into that accountability piece. So, perfect.
Mr. Anderson, you've always run a great school, so we appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else from the board? Thank you so much, and we appreciate the report from the camp. Thank you. Mr. Roski.
All right. So they were the spotlight of this month. Are there any questions for any other administrators that are on site with us tonight?
Do we have a Buffalo High School report?
So I was told we did, so it wasn't here, so we will submit that back out to you. I talked with Heidi before the meeting started, so somewhere it got lost in the transition, but we will get that submitted to you as a board and put on the website for the public.
I didn't know if any of the principals wanted to say anything about their scores.
We'll do an overview of that at the next work session and go over their school improvement plan and do that view with Dr. Miller. That's part of the work session, and we can make sure all the administrators are here to kind of talk about where they're at.
Mr. Allen, thanks for sending that video that I couldn't open. Apparently you knew that.
Fixed it.
Yep, you did. Thank you.
So the plan of, we have Buffalo High School, New West, and Cloud Peak on the plans. Is that
so? You got Buffalo High School, and you've got Cloud Peak Elementary putting together plans to move forward. New West is still they're putting one together.
I can talk about that if you want.
Yeah, so Mike, I'll let you talk about that.
Because our numbers are so small, I know I sent the report specifically to you, Jan, as our liaison on the board, and talked through some things, but for a lot of the categories, you can't get a rating if you have fewer than 10 students take a test. And, for example, last year we had 3 sophomores take the YTOP. And so some of the pieces are based on that. So what happens next, any of the schools are under review. They have you do a school improvement plan regardless. But it goes to a small school review committee.
Right.
And then they'll come up with something. So it's great data to look at regardless.
Who's all involved in putting these plans together? Is it the school, the principals, teachers?
So it's the responsibility of the school to put a team together. I'll let Craig talk about what he's doing with some guidance from Dr. Miller and from the state. We've cut a couple of the resources that are helping schools with that. So,
it's a team effort. So with like the group I took to Riverton for the PLC training, that's what we call our guiding coalition. And they're somebody that represents each group in our building. And so that's where the heavy lifting will happen. So
I'm glad to see it's school center.
Ideally, we would start this process in May, and we would have quite a while to go. But if you find out what September 30th that you're partially meeting expectations, and you have to have a report in by 17th October. So or not 17th October, 1st of November, but you
so
know,
submit us to the state.
Yeah, so ideally we would just be doing it in May and starting that process, and you're working on it through the summer. So I'm not sure how much more information we have other than the student growth percentiles. Although I couldn't look at the information, Steve probably could, and say, yeah, you're going to make it, you're not. I'm not smart enough to do that. I can do the math and figure out a percentage. So
Jan, this will be an action item to approve of plans in November, so that's what I want to have it as a work session and then talk about their development. And I'll be honest, this is new to the whole state, so this is a whole new template that they're expecting schools to develop and submit. They've had plans of improvement in the past, but these are different plans, different template. So we're kind of all in a new transition of what that looks like. And I agree with Craig. It's a very short turnaround from the time you get the report card and knowing your data to developing a plan. This is what they do in schools. They're doing this all the time. And looking at student data and what they're doing to move forward, it aligns with what we're doing with the PLCs. It aligns to that what we're doing with quality teaching in the classroom and the social emotional piece, but this is that benchmark year of scores, and everything is new. It's new, and the fact is some of the forms and some of the processes are new to a lot of people. Okay, but you as a board of trustees will have an opportunity to approve BHS and Cloud Peak. I don't want to get anybody's hopes up, but the small school reviews in the past sometimes haven't come out till May. So we'll just continue to work on that to get that committee together with, like Mike explained, that they're just small schools around the state that don't have the numbers to produce the data. So, okay.
Thank you.
Do any of the other principals have anything they'd like to add? For the month coming up? We'll do a school improvement plan as well. Don't you combine the two together? They have to be individual. Oh, is that right? Okay.
So my goal is, even with Brandon, every school will do one, but it's not required by the state.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions from the board? Thank you. Ms. Drosky?
All right, director's report. We'll start out with John, facilities.
Evening.
Madam Chair, John, how's the playground coming? I know it's you had to redo part of it at Lori's school.
No.
Oh, I thought we had to.
No.
Okay.
No, last year we did a repair on Craig that caught peaks.
Oh, it was okay.
And it failed, and I've been fighting with them to get them here. At least I have a date now. They're coming in October 24th, the week out to repair the repair.
So as the weather changes, can they still do that?
Yeah.
They can. So is there a temperature? There's got to be a temperature you can.
As long as it's not freezing, because it sets up pretty quick.
Right. I hope it is.
They put it in when it was 100 degrees out, and we didn't get good ceiling, so now they're going to try it when it's 30 degrees, see if it works.
See, it was ripping away from it. Yeah. The playground surface of the sidewalk failed. It ripped apart. So we redid it. Well, now it's stuck to the concrete. Now it's ripping apart from the other surface. So, but I'm hoping next summer we can put a cap on that playground. And I've stated that in other reports that we got to cap that thing to try to hang on to it for a few more years.
So. The ground looked wonderful. I'm sure that's partially Mother Nature's help with some rain, but they look really nice, John. So. Tell you the team. Thank you.
That sound system is awesome. Did anyone feel that?
You can hear it. You can hear it now.
Yeah. Did you come up with any ideas for your supplementary heat in Casey?
I talked to the electricians. They come out with a new style. I am yet to see that, but I'm hoping to be down there this week with the electrician to walk the rooms and see what's going to best fit. So.
Do you know what the timetable might be after a decision?
As soon as we can get the information and is it going to work and put eyes on it, it's just getting a quote, getting it approved, and going forward. So,
I don't think we'll be able to. Forward, just getting people to do it.
Okay.
And figuring out, you know, because I don't think major maintenance is going to pay for it, but we just have to take that hit and get it in.
Mm-hmm. Do you have heat?
Yeah.
Yes.
John, until they get the system fixed, has anybody looked at, like, you looked at the heater air conditioning units that, say, motel rooms have? Is that possible to install some of those in the cold rooms until things get fixed?
I don't really want to cut another hole in the wall.
I've wondered if you...
I'd rather put a radiant heater on the wall, interior wall, or
I wondered if you do it through a window, though.
Mm. I wouldn't want to do that either. It's just opening up a can of worms.
So one of the things they talked about that would be option is this radiant heat that's in the ceiling would add to the rooms, which that's what we're get the electrician down there that would be approved by the fire marshal, and you know potentially could even just remain in the room and not have to be taken down. So
once we get the system fixed, we can just shut them off and have them there.
The radiant heat.
Yeah.
And you've done that through propane or natural gas?
No, it'll be electric. So most cost-effective, we're not tapping into gas lines. We're not running gas lines down there. And just
there's gas that comes into the school, isn't there? Natural gas.
Yeah. back in the boiler room.
So, you got all those lines in.
Yeah, we'd be disrupting a whole lot more if we ran gas lines all the way from back there. So.
Any other questions? Keep up the good work, Mr. Z.
And like I said, I invite you guys. Hopefully, we're having a little problems with our robot. But I am inviting the controller when it's going out of it. We're having a little bit of oops, but the guy's going to be here Wednesday morning. I invite you to the football game. We're going to do something a little special in that field, just so you guys can see it. So,
Jan is the chairman. Just kudos to John. He said, I had an opportunity to sit in with John with our draft 400 different findings of our evaluation of facilities. So just to prepare you as a board of trustees, that will be at a work session too. So I've asked Levi to be ready to present to you as a board.
I thought about printing it off.
But some really good conversations came out of that, where we're going to head with, rotation of floors and buildings and just keeping things up. So we continue to move forward with that, but it was pretty overwhelming in a 3.5 period. So a lot of people put a lot of time in the evaluation of our facilities. So that's good. We did a educational suitability study of New West, which hasn't come back yet, Mike. But we'll keep you posted. And the heating system at the high school is on its way to being fixed. So, anyway, thanks, John, for all the work your team's done.
Well, having that 5-year plan, 10-year plan is something we've been wanting to ask for a long time. So
okay.
Ms. Koski.
So, I'm going to go with nutrition services.
Hi.
How's that Titan school program working out? Are the parents using it, or are they? How's that work?
I think they are. Heidi gets an online payment report every Monday morning, and I don't know, the last few I've looked at have been from $1,000 to about $4,000 a week.
Yeah,
so
it's increased quite a bit.
Yeah, so I think they're using it pretty good. We'll get some staff on it too, I think. So I think there might be a misperception that they have to, if they have an account there, then they have to apply for the free or reduced lunch application. Mm-hmm. But it's not. That's just a piece of that portal. And so they can do just online payments. They don't even have to do online payments there. They can just see what their kids are eating and still make payments in the schools or whatever. But it's just a tool for them for a lot of different things.
It's really nice.
So, yeah. I've had a few parents this week actually call in or come in or whatever, explain to me how middle school lunch works. Because they'll eat lunch and then they buy a lot of snacks. And so I'm teaching them that if they have a family portal account, they can set a spending limit for their child. Or they can tell me, I don't want my kid to buy Rice Krispie treats anymore. And I can put that on a no-buy list for an individual student. Things like that. So, yeah, we've had some good amounts come through there that I've talked to Dr. Ferris about, and so he's assured me they kind of give the parents a heads up so that it starts with the parents to have those conversations.
Which I will say, it's a good system because then we get a heads up, and we'd much rather call a parent and say, just so you know, they spent $13 today on extra stuff.
Right.
And as you can imagine, most parents are whispering.
And if they have a parent portal account or a family portal account, they can go in and see. He bought 3 Uncrustables, 5 fruit roll-ups, a bag of baked Lay's, whatever. They can see all of that.
And he's the kid you want to sit by at lunch.
It's a very good thing for everybody.
Is a great thing. So.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, Ricky, you probably can answer this, but hopefully with the help of Connie, you can. So as people have made donations through the years, is there a way that they can get a tax deduction for the donation they made?
We can just issue them a letter saying thank you for your donation of $50, that kind of thing.
Kind of like what we do with the beef.
But is there a way that you can actually get a deduction for your the IRS?
They would have to go to their account with that letter. All we can do is acknowledge that they gave it for this amount of money.
Their letter can probably serve as a receipt.
Mm-hmm. No? Didn't have a dollar amount on it. It had a dollar amount.
Mm-hmm. So what we can do, some of the other districts, that just came across our WASPA portal about that issue, and they've got some, and you're right, there it does not have an amount on it. So none of the districts are putting amounts on it. So,
and is that something they're looking into then, Connie?
That's something that they were talking about, so I can pull all that up and see. They've got example letters, and then I will call the person who wrote the letter and say, why do you not put an amount on there? I'll work on that and get that back to you.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions? Thank you, Ricky. Thank you for all you do.
All right, technology.
Ms. Besson, anything you'd like to highlight for us?
No, it's just been a busy month, just getting like the phones finished at Clucky, fiber at the middle school and sped. That's been plaguing us for years. They damaged that fiber run when they pulled the parking lot at Metalark, and 10 or more years ago. So it's great to get that done.
And you're already planning for next year?
Starting to work on that. Get some orders in.
So what's the average lifespan of a Chromebook?
We're trying to rotate them 4 years. So usually like fifth grade, we give them a Chromebook when they come into fifth grade and ninth grade. And then when they graduate, we give it to them.
Does that lifespan like half when it's given to children?
Actually, because they're younger, we don't take better care of them.
Do they? Yeah.
Any other questions? Thank you.
So, Christy, when you need help, thank goodness there's companies that provide a service to do that. And so, are they local or out of town?
That did the fiber run, or?
Well, when you had trouble with the school and you had to hire another IT company to come help you out. But
we had to contact somebody out of South Dakota that works on the intercom for the high school one. The one at the Cloud Peak, we were able to hire a company out of Casper for that.
So was that fiber optic line, was it already laid, or did they...
No, they had to run it.
So they ran a new one?
Yeah, it had to have a boring...
Yeah, I had a shot done, bored it. There's so much stuff underground. So we got a bore, I got a bore log, and pulled all new fiber, which the district had bought, 3 years ago?
Yeah.
Been sitting there and just couldn't... No one really wanted to put a bucket in the ground back there. So... Shot it in, and it's done.
Got her done.
What was it running on, four?
Yeah.
On four, and if it went down, Clear Creek was crashed.
Mm-hmm. Four strands.
So it's got a whole new run in it now.
Brandon was okay with that, though.
Sharon, on the other hand.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you again. I appreciate it.
So transportation, we don't have a report, but we do have Tim with us here tonight. I'm assuming you didn't want to talk, so I'll talk unless you want to.
I don't really know much yet. Yeah.
So Dennis is going to be out for a while, just in and out. So we have some people that will be supporting the process. Dennis has assigned a couple of his people to kind of help oversee some things. Connie and I will be meeting with them on a weekly basis to kind of keep things moving forward with that. I would like to emphasize we had a very open and transparent and honest meeting with all transportation drivers today. It lasted about an hour and a half with some really good conversations and insight. And if there's one thing that came out of it, the transportation department would like to do that again, at least maybe twice or three times a year, and just kind of feel their thoughts out. So that's kind of what's happening with transportation. So, okay.
Thank you for being here tonight.
We didn't mention that to you the other night. We just said show up and watch. So.
On to, are we into business reports?
So.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. I jumped ahead. I'm sorry. Curriculum and learning.
So that I think I'm next.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So is there any questions for the superintendent?
I didn't mean to.
Any questions for me as a superintendent?
I apologize.
You're good.
Anything you would like to highlight for us, Ms. Strauss?
So I would. So on behalf of the School Boards Association, I'd like to present this plaque to Lynette Fox from the Wyoming School Boards Association. Official recognition for her work and certification. So thank you.
Anything else you'd like to highlight for us, Mr. Hoskins?
You know, I think we've highlighted a lot of things prior to this report, unless you have questions for me, but professional development today, we had guest speakers. I thought that went very well. Both presenters this morning, back to the buildings. We had some PD with administration related to professional learning communities, how we kicked that off. We'll have two people tomorrow going through the schools to kind of help leadership with what the PLCs and what's happening there to grow with that piece. Just lots of things. Finished up the federal grant audit last week. Continue to move forward with some of those things. I think we had great conversations with the Athletic Review Committee. We're going to be talking about some things from our work session, but unless you have questions for me as a board, I think I'm good.
Okay, I know Mr. Roman will be giving us a report on that.
All right, so then we'll go to curriculum and learning.
Madam Chair, can I ask a question?
Sure.
So, Charles, we sent a survey out on culture. Is that something the board will get back?
Yep. We just had that conversation. It's kind of went by the wayside, but we're starting to put that data together to give to you as a board, but it needs to go out to individual schools, too. So, yeah.
Some other thought is, you know, as we're trying to catch kids up on loss of learning because of COVID, and we spent quite a little bit of money on that, is there a way to send a survey to kids to ask them if they're getting what they need or what do you need? I'm just trying to think as before it gets too far into school year and the seniors are saying, I wish we had done this, or the juniors, what kind of help? And maybe you guys have that collaboration with the kids and you've already asked. But
I think that, you know, each school level is a little different from New West to the high school to the elementary. So students' needs are really should be identified through this PLC process and the data. And what we're looking at when you talk about accelerating learning loss, where are they at? How are we growing them? High school does have Naviance that they have that communication piece with that they can talk to kids of where they're at. But that's also on what they passed and haven't passed. So that would be a counselor question, parent question, kind of why we're doing PTOs. And, you know, Craig in his building, Lori in her building.
And Charles, I was thinking more towards the high school. As those kids graduate, we caught them up? Because the other kids, we have time to catch up, but the seniors, we don't. So
that should be part of what the counselors and they're doing with Naviance and what the test scores and whether they passed a class thing on line with credit, if they're not on track for graduation, so if they fail the class. So those are all conversations that are happening in every school and probably started last May when any kid that's not on track for graduation. So those kids should be getting caught up with that piece, their ACT scores. If there's some of those college-bound students that are looking for a higher ACT, there should have been some prep with Naviance, getting them ready for that. And you know what? I'd let Mike speak to what they're doing in New West, but that's a whole other conversation about how they're catching kids up. So, okay. Good question, though. Each school is different, including Jake and KC, so... Didn't mean that in that way.
So the counselors, were they talking to the kids, and do the kids feel out there getting caught up? You don't know what you don't know.
That's a great question. Yeah. And so we start out as kids transfer from eighth grade into ninth grade. We make sure they're on track to be successful in their math and English classes. Okay, and that drives our schedule in KC for that reason. So there are years where we offer an Algebra 1A class. Because we notice that some kiddos are struggling and they're just not going to be able to make it through Algebra 1 all in 1 year. And so we'll split that class and make it an Algebra 1A and then a 1B situation. So every year in May, like Mr. Oski mentioned, we start to plan for the next year's learning and what kids will need to make that happen. The counselor and I sat down at the end of the school year and since I got a new counselor, I sat down at the beginning of the school year and we go through all the transcripts of everybody that's 10th through 12th grade to make sure they're still on track to graduate that they're registered for their right classes, and we make sure that that's taken care of. So those are things that we have done. So when we talk about programming, small school, we're pretty flexible and we try to fit their needs.
Glad to hear it. Thanks.
Yeah. And Dave, the high school should be doing the same thing, and I think they are. Once they finish the second semester, kids that are behind or put in a remedial class or fail a class, that's what their master schedule should have been developed for this coming school year.
Maybe Ms. Roski, the principal would be adjusting kind of through.
We can talk about all of that at the work session coming up in November. Okay. But those are great questions. But we have to be very clear. New West is different than Buffalo High School. It's different than KC. And Meadowlark is different than Cloud Peak. Every school has a little different way of tracking where their where that learning loss, or accelerated learning, as the federal government calls it. But I want to be real. We've been doing this in education for a long time. So when they say that we're finally starting to identify and catch kids where we need to accelerate learning, that's what we've been doing. If we're doing the right things, we're identifying kids and catching them up. So that this is a process that's been going on for a while in public education. Not what maybe 30 years ago, but over the last 5 to 8 years, there's been a big push towards that. So. And actually, that'd be right up Steve's alley. So that's the key off to you. Curriculum and learning.
Madam Chair, my board report is complete. So if any questions that you guys have.
Well, after listening to it, is there anything you'd really like to highlight on it?
Mr. Moon, you can cover your ears, but the data. The organic creation of the data, where teachers are wanting to talk about the data, or can you do this report, can you do that, so they can have those conversations amongst the experts. So I'm just providing the data and sitting back and listening to the conversations, even in Craig's building during his PLC meetings. Here it is. Here's, you know, the blueprints, or, you know, here's your equity students, whatever that data was. And just, here it is, and just sit back and just let the conversation start, and it's just sweet music to my ears, actually. So that's the highlight.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yes, sir. So, Mr. Miller, are we, as the White Top Forested looks like in 10th grade, are we looking to go to a 7-period day? Are we having those discussions? As I look around the state, it seems like the high schools that are doing the 7-period day maybe are a little bit more successful. Are we putting too much on kids' plates?
So we'll put that back to Dean.
Whoever gets to answer that.
So we had a gentleman come in by the name of Mitch Kraft, who came in, evaluated our schedules, and did a overview of what some of the high-performing districts and other districts around the state has done. He presented that to me last week, Dave. I haven't desegregated the data to look at that, but those are some things that I will probably try to present if the time allows at the November work session. But in fairness to that, that data probably needs to go to the high school principals and stuff too, so we're segregating that out.
So Mr. Kraft is with the...
So Mitch Kraft, Kraft Consulting is who I brought in to do the principal's evaluation, the teacher evaluation. I also asked him to do an evaluation of schedules and looking at where we're at in that data piece. So that's one of the components that he's put together for us. He's also, we contracted with him to do some work with the principals in that growth piece. So he's a third-party consultant, but Mitch Kraft was the former assistant superintendent for Sheridan 2. So he is consulting around the state of Wyoming. He got out of the political realm of being an assistant superintendent, is now starting his own company. So he is doing some work with us.
Great.
Thanks.
And also to answer your question about that, the 10th grade YTOP, that's part of that blueprint where we can look at performance level descriptors. We can compare that with our curriculum, with our new math curriculum, Savas. So are we teaching to proficient? Is our mindset of proficient, is that aligning to what the state has? So we can really pinpoint down to look at our curriculum and see what areas we can improve on. And that's what the math teachers are actually asking for, that part of that data. Met with them last Wednesday. So again, that's that excitement piece where they're asking for the data. Can we get this? What can we do to improve? Mm-hmm. So we're trying to drill down right to the curriculum. Right. And again, there's other pieces of that, like you're mentioning, you know, what about the period and what about that? And so that's the expertise of Mr. Kraft that can help us look at the big picture and hopefully make some good decisions in the future.
Thank you.
I'll go ahead and go on the record and say no for me on the changing period again for the high school.
I think they're pretty.
It's no for me.
So, all right.
So, I mean, there's a process. And so I just want to reiterate to everybody that putting the data together so we can make good decisions is what the intent behind this is, because there's a lot of misinformation. So I am, as a superintendent, we're not going to make change just for the sake of making change. We've got to make change that is important to kids, aligned to what we're doing with our plans of improvement, what meets the needs of our ours. And there's studies out there, too. Sorry, it's not the curriculum, it's not the 8-period day, it's instruction in the classroom that impacts kids the most and what we're doing. So we're all on track, but I want to make sure you as a board of trustees and even the community, looking at our calendar, calendar guys right over here, we're going to look at our district calendar and start putting a 2 to 3 year plan together there. It all has to align. There's just some meshing. You can't change one without impacting the other. So we really got to make sure we slow things down and do what's right based on the data for Johnson County. Okay.
I hope that we can also at the same time come back and say that the YTOP and all these other proficiency things and everything else don't mean a thing until it comes, you know, to what's being taught in the classroom. We don't have these all over the world, and we get taught all over the world. I think that we didn't have them when I was a kid, and so you'd be fine. I don't like, I said it before, I don't like these. I don't like standardized tests. I'm not saying that it's not important. I'm saying that, you know, it is important to talk about other things other than scoring.
So that's what a profile of a graduate is. So we might add that third layer that's paralleling over here along with all this other stuff we're talking about. So we got to mesh things together. But the reality is this was a great retreat conversations and having, just making sure we're having a good conversation about, because what is the purpose? So you got the profile of graduates. You got the governor doing his piece. What are we aligning to standards? The state has looked at identifying what all districts should be teaching as the standards. And just there's a lot of change in addition to coming out of COVID. So we really just need to make sure we're looking at all the data before we make any big changes. Okay.
And we'll do what's right for Johnson County, not somebody else's.
Absolutely right. Because the experts are sitting right along the wall.
Special services.
Wow. I want to highlight Special O. They just got back. They did great. We had 3 kiddos go to the state level in Casper, and so we're super excited to support that. Got some really cool things happening as far as our best practice book. It's something that's kind of been probably 2 years in the making, and it just outlines all of our procedures and how things are done in our district, and it's finally like being printed and put together in my office right now, and so that should be out amongst all of the buildings here soon, so we're excited about that too.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Madam Chair. So Val, there was a warrant for a student with hearing needs.
Mm-hmm.
And it was substantial, but it was paid out of the general fund. Is there a reason it was paid out of the general fund and not the special ed fund?
Both funds are reimbursable, and so it depends
on... In the
on
general?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I was just curious why it didn't come out of the special ed fund.
It did come out of the special ed reimbursable fund. So there's general ed, special ed that's reimbursed, and then you have the 611 and 619, is that what you're talking about, Dave?
Oh, I just showed it was out of the general, and I was surprised to see that.
But it's still reimbursed.
Yeah.
It is. Oh, I'm sure it is, yeah.
There's special ed general.
So we don't identify
special ed. Yep, we don't identify the difference. But yeah, we'll get reimbursed for that.
So that's also the move as a district, as we're moving towards a stability in our budget by 2025, is anything that can be reimbursable, we're putting in the general fund, so that becomes a constant. So then when federal grants either diminish or go away, that we have that. So pushing as much as we can afford to the general fund, which is reimbursable, is part of our goal to be to solidify our budget by 2025 too.
Thank you. Who's this report?
First, I want to kind of apologize for not having the budget stuff in there. I'm not quite ready to get all that together and to make that pretty. I'm still living in last year. Just for information, we spent about 14% of our budget, and we've had about 25% of the school year. So we're looking really, really good. It's not closed. It's not anything that we need to worry about. So we've been concentrating really hard on things catching up from last year, doing the federal audit. We're preparing for the audit, which starts on the 26th. And we spent some time with, like today, we spent some time with the transportation department, so it's all been good.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, Rec Board.
No news.
You can see the financial report is attached.
BOCES.
Just a regular meeting. They have 26 students right now. They would like to take more, but they need more staff in order to do that. So they're moving right along. BOCES.
They have a meeting scheduled for October 17th, and that's tentative. So
it was just tentative, wasn't it?
It's just tentative. They haven't
sent it like. I didn't know if I missed it.
No. They said 17th. Yeah. So. Okay. And that's what we worked out for.
Okay. We're up to leadership governance. I'm going to go through instruction. I've asked Vice Chair Lynette to go through it for us. So.
Leadership and governance is 2.6 is on instruction, and from the board standpoint, the board will adopt standards appropriate to meet the district, state, and federal requirements. We'll adopt graduation requirements that meet or exceed state standards. We will report to the community the status of education in the district annually. Order to monitor and maintain accountability for students' learning. We'll request reports from the superintendent relative to assessments and instructional programs, and then we will approve the annual district calendars, all relevant to the scores that we're talking about tonight. The superintendent will be responsible for the continuous development, implementation, and evaluation of instructional programs focusing on student achievement. He will report information to the board to assist us in monitoring and maintaining the accountability for student achievement. He will provide leadership in meeting the district, state, and federal standards, and will prepare and recommend district calendars for the next year.
I think we've covered all these tonight. Yes. Last meeting.
Absolutely.
We've touched on every single one of them. So, moving on. All right, may I have a motion to accept the consent agenda as presented?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passed. All right, we're back to our policy revisions. I'd like to say there was one question about where are the policies located. If you go to our website and go to the school board website portion, it'll say right there, policies. So that is where you can find all of our policies for the entire district. And if you ever have anybody has trouble finding those policies, please give Heidi a call and she can help. Correct, Heidi? Yep, thank you. All right, the first one, we have a motion. For policy JEB for entrance age, may I have a motion to approve the policy? These are all on second reading, by the way.
I'll make a motion to approve policy JEB entrance age 22.
May I have a second?
A second.
discussion. As you can see down here, we will support the results of the screening process. That's the big change provided by the K-2 school. Mrs. Lambert, do you have anything you'd like to add to that? Okay, all those in favor for approving policy JEB, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Policy passes. May I have a motion to accept GCBA policy, professional staff compensation plans? There isn't a whole lot of change in there, but this has is on the second reading.
Jan, I'll make a motion to approve the professional staff compensation plan.
Thank you. May I have a second?
Second.
Do we have any discussion on the second reading? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Policy passes. Okay, these the next two are through first reading. We went back to the policy committee where revisions were completed at the request of our board. They are now ready for second reading. The first one is academic freedom, and I have a motion to accept policy IB.
I'll make a motion to accept policy IB.
May I have a second, please?
Second.
Thank you. Do we have any discussion? As you can see, there was a lot of deletion there. They felt that, that what was stated was not really policy. It was just words, what kind of words. Am I saying that right, Mr. Oski?
Sorry, I was reading into the next one. So, academic freedom. So, it was a good conversation. Maggie and led that discussion very well, and I think we just had a lot of overlap, so we just cleaned it up.
Right, and like I said, some of the words that are in there that has nothing to do with a policy, so that's why they were taken out.
It's basically to remove any redundancies and then just any terminology that might be kind of like divisive or politically charged, just so that it isn't just a buzzword or a phrase now, but is something that can stand the test of time.
It's actually a policy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's you're going to see a lot more of that in the next policy.
Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's where I have a problem with. Not so much this one, but a lot on the next one.
Okay, we'll get to that one here.
So, and I know you encouraged us to vote for this on the second reading, but
for this one here, for the first, this one
for both.
No, yeah. We're going to just vote. No, they're each one separate.
Right? No, I think no. I'm just referring to the note that it says here that it's recommended to approve revisions on the second reading. I don't know who put that in there, but probably should leave that.
Well, we're just voting about how you feel.
Right.
Okay.
I don't think it's necessary, but that it's recommended that we vote a certain way on anything.
I think it's more of confirmation that it's gone through the process and has been approved by the process. That is not voted on.
No, it says, and they are now ready for second reading.
He's looking,
oh,
he's looking
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I missed it, too. I didn't see it.
I mean, I see what you mean, but I take it to mean more that it's gone through the process and the board is recommending.
So the recommendation is recommended to come to you as a board
ready.
For approval.
Does that make that worse?
Didn't make it better.
Okay.
I really didn't see that. I'm sorry, Randy. Okay, all those in favor of policy IB, academic freedom, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
I'm sorry. No. Motion carries. Did you get that vote?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. We have a motion for policy IMB, teaching about controversial and sensitive issues. We have a motion.
I have a motion to table this.
for next meeting?
I don't like the revisions, or I don't like one part that's missing.
So we need a second.
Motion dies. So may I have a motion to accept policy IMB, teaching about controversial issues? May I have a motion?
So, Jan, if I could ask you a question, I know it's open for discussion. There's some wording that I don't like in here, so I don't want to approve it and then ask to go back to it.
We don't have a motion yet.
Yes, that's why I'm asking you.
Okay. Then we will vote. So, before we can have a discussion, we have to have a motion.
I would move to approve policy IMB on second reading.
May I have a second? Okay, discussion. Okay, now.
Okay, so it says in there each teacher has a right and the professional responsibility to teach about controversial issues. And I'm okay with that. Do you, Charles, do you talk to them about the sensitive issues and how you would like to steer them, or how does that work?
So each teacher has a right. We had this discussion, so it was a good discussion that was there. So each teacher has the right and the professional responsibility. The key word is professional responsibility to teach about the controversial issues in history. So those are all aligned to standards. So those are things that we as a profession have to teach to the standards. So whether it was Vietnam War, whether we were supposed to be teaching, whether we're supposed to be over there or not, but we have a professional responsibility is the key word that we added to teach about those controversial issues, but not necessarily give our personal opinion.
Yeah, and it talks there about being objective. Maggie, you guys probably had quite a little bit of discussion about this, and mm-hmm. No doubt you felt that you got the wording right.
We did. We spoke, probably for a good 45 minutes at least on this one policy. And one of the main points that was brought up was just, must it be said? I think Mr. Hansen or Dr. Hansen said that well, that like if it seemed redundant or if it was information that was already in the first paragraph and then just rephrased again in the second paragraph with more language, that was something that we thought could maybe come out to just clear up the policy and make it a little bit more straightforward.
So we didn't change the policy?
No, we just like cleaned it up so that it was clearer and you didn't get so lost in some of the verbiage. Definitely that terminology about having it be a professional responsibility was more positive than a right and an obligation. And then just that portion that talked about sharing the opinions but not having the right to indoctrinate, that's already implied because we actually looked up the term indoctrinate, and it's the process of teaching a group or a person to accept a set of beliefs uncritically. And prior in the policy, it already says that we're going to be critically thinking about these issues as they come up. So, again, that was another like just politically charged word that didn't seem necessary to even be in there. So most of the revisions and deletions were just to make it more straightforward and clear.
The reason I question it, I think in the next year or two, you're going to see a lot of sensitive issues come down. And I just hope that you guys, and I know you are, you guys as a professional team are talking about what we're going to talk to students about and what we're not going to talk to them about. That's my hope.
Lynn?
Well, that's where I get hung up with what I think is objectively reasonable may not be what somebody else does. I know trying to steer away from political, issues of this, we are a political body,
because we represent the community as a whole. So when the community is concerned about what topics are being taught in our schools and what books are in our libraries and that kind of thing, we are the ones that are supposed to be the representatives of people. And right now, the hot topic, and has been for the last several years, and it's going to be for the continuing years to come, is what's being taught, how the teachers are indoctrinating our kids, quote unquote. And so the big part that I have a problem with in this one is the word parent is not listed in this anywhere. And I, as a parent, have a real hard time knowing that it's just going to be up to, because if we do this by policy, it's now up to the teacher. Not
it's actually
anybody.
The standards, though. The policy states which contribute to the attainment of course objectives. And
yeah,
educators don't just
decide,
make those up.
You can
they
decide,
come from standards.
You can decide to include in your standards teaching, I'm going to have this book to be read. I'm going to talk about this. We have some very opposite-ended political views of teachers that are in our schools from my personal beliefs, and I don't want them deciding what direction they want to teach. And if our parents have a problem with a particular book that comes home to them or a particular book that they have checked out and they bring home, I don't want it to be up to just the teachers. I want parents to have a say in it. I want the school board to have a say in something that we have. We had a question come up as to whether or not a particular book was in our library. I was told that it's not. But if we do have something like that, I want to be able to have a say in whether or not that's in there, not just whatever the teachers.
And Randy, you already do have policy in place for parents that want to challenge a book or a process by going to the principal. So we just went through one of those book challenges. We're a committee. So there's already a separate policy for that if the parents. So I totally agree with you. Parents need to be able to have a voice. But this policy is based around standards. This is what they should be teaching. It kind of ties to the code of ethics that we brought in at the beginning of the year as we move forward with that, the PTSB, is we have a professional responsibility to teach to the standards and not to teach our personal beliefs. And then that would be something that's handled in each building through the evaluation process. But parents do have a voice. And if there is something that comes home, there is policy. And I know there is because we're going to revisit the policy because we just had a book challenge at the district level that I thought went very well. Leanne handled that very well. I know I sent you as a board that article that happened in Casper, but the thing I struggle with that is now the perception every district has those same books, and the reality is we don't. However, we have processes. We probably need to clean up those processes, so we did talk about bumping that up to, and I'll just repeat what I told Meg, is, hey, we got the policies we need to bump to the front to talk through the policy committee to bring to you as a board of trustees to approve, because we do want parents to understand there is a process that they do have input with what they're doing. Dr. Miller, with the adoption of textbooks, we've started this since he's come on, is we want to have parents involved in looking at the adoption of what we are doing too. So we are trying to clean some of those up.
So I guess I'm confused as to what did that, if we're talking about just standards, so, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic, what's controversial? And I know your example was the Vietnam War. If we have teachers venting their opinions as to whether or not we were supposed to be involved in something like that, you know, that should be addressed by their particular administrator. They're not teaching history. But what I'm saying is that if we're not talking about some of these other specifics that are outside the realm, what is considered to be controversial? A spelling bee or some literature, history? What exactly are we? If you can give me some examples of what might be controversial if we're not talking about
So controversy is going to be a personal opinion, what's controversial or not, because there'll be some people that feel that it's controversial, some people that won't. That kind of gets into that opinion-based, well, this is what I believe, this is what she believes. So I guess that's a pretty broad topic when we start talking about it. However, you're correct. When we're teaching to a standard, there's going to be two sides to every story, especially in social studies. Math is probably not. There's certain steps you have to do in math. There's certain steps you have to do in science. English has an interpretation of, you know, there's vocabulary writing for vocational teachers, and there's, you know, poetry at one end. So there's different things. But I think our focus here, and it was a super good conversation, and I don't know how we can do a better job, but maybe we can invite rotating board members, but this was a conversation about professional teaching and teaching to the standards and kind of cleaning up some of that verbiage. And I don't want to speak. I mean, I was there. There were several people. Dr. Hansen, you were there. But I think it was a 45-minute discussion about what's best for kids, for the protection of kids, but also cleaning up the responsibility for teachers and protecting them. So that's the intent behind this policy. And there is. If we want to get the elephant out of the room, we got CRTs, we got SEL, we got the critical race theory, you got social emotional learning. There's a lot of controversy viewpoints out there through social media. But again, there's a process of parents have a concern. So I want you to be reassured that we do want parents involved. We're trying to implement more PTO, get parents into schools, find out what we're actually doing.
No, you're fine, Randy. Go.
That's what we're supposed to be doing. And most parents will not know about it until we're already teaching the SEL, until we're already into the CRT, until we're already doing this stuff, because they're not paying attention. And that's the simple truth. And so it's, you know, this is the reason that I ran for the school board, was to keep that garbage out of our schools. And so I'm just trying to make sure that we still have avenues of being able to change things. If, you know, when you have a title of teaching about controversial / sensitive issues, CRT, SCS, those are all of what I would probably say 99 out of 100 people are going to think what you're talking about in this day and age. Not, you know, whether we should, you know, whether we should have gone to Vietnam or not. Those are not the things that we're thinking about.
So just to reassure, and this is a great conversation, but I want to be able to reassure you as a board. And I know you just used the word garbage, but we're not teaching garbage. And we're teaching to the standards.
If it's CRT, then it's garbage.
But we have not adopted CRT.
I want to be very clear.
People out there think that we've adopted critical race theory. Critical race theory is a doctorate level philosophy. And that's not a curriculum that's been adopted through the state standards. But there's some interpretation of the wording as we move through that. And if the Board of Trust, I mean, we can do a whole other sequence. I mean, we did do a CRT. I think it was Steve and Mike did a critical race theory. We can bring that back to the table. We can go over that again. And if there's any discomfort or you don't like the direction of where this is headed, okay, let's fail the second reading with the understanding we'll come back, or however you want to do it so that you feel comfortable of what we're doing. But that evaluation process starts with administration. It talks about teachers, and there has to be a little bit of some time of professional trust that our teachers are not bringing this stuff into the classroom. And if they are, and the parents are aware of it, then let's talk with the teacher, let's talk with the administrator. And if there's a book there's a controversy about, let's follow that chain of policy procedures through policy that we can kind of move forward with. But I want to reassure you, there isn't anybody intentionally doing anything to harm kids, but if there is a perception we need to address it, and let's start with those conversations with the teacher and the principal, because that is not taking away the right of the parents. The parent has every right to have a conversation with the teacher and administration about what's being taught.
Mike?
A couple of philosophical points here. Number one, there was an expression that was hammered into us forever, in loco parentis. As a teacher, you step in and take the place of the parent. And it's not just your right, but it's your obligation to do what's right for the kids. And you can go clear back to Plato. Every culture has two decisions to make. What are you going to teach your kids, and who's going to teach them? And so it comes down to hiring the best people that you can, knowing that just like in a major corporation, you're going to have to trust them and turn them loose to do their thing. My question is there anything that teachers are given where they are told how they can make defense for what they teach? I mean, is there an apparatus for that?
No.
I mean,
there's no professional standard of care in a code of ethics for teachers. So when you say, is there a mechanism in place, that comes back to, there is a mechanism of, here's the standards, this is what you teach.
Yeah.
Okay, if you're starting to teach your personal viewpoint, then I have a hope that would be a red flag. That's a conversation that we have either through evaluation. Because if you're teaching to the standards are what we're assessed on with the blueprints, and you're kind of moving in that direction. Mm-hmm. However, the books that you read, if there's controversial books in there, there's a process. It starts with the teacher and the administrator. So that, you know, that whole code of ethics that we talked about, professional code of ethics of what your responsibility is and how you do that. I mean, there's just lots of terminology there. However, the protocol doesn't change. If there's a book that goes home that's required by a teacher and a parent has a concern, then let's follow that chain of command up through the principal or through the teacher, the administrator, and then to a book challenge as we move through that. You know, and to be sensitive of what a teacher said or didn't say in the classroom, an administrator can't be in the classroom every minute of the day. All right. However, do we have to have some respect that they've had a lot of professional training, they know what they're doing, if there's what they're doing in the classroom, and teachers are human, let's be honest. They have a lot on their plate too, but that reality is if something did happen, I'm sure it probably wasn't intentional and a misperception, and let's have those conversations. But if you don't feel comfortable, let me know how you would feel comfortable, because I'll gather the administrative team and we'll come back and we can have a conversation, or I can get everybody to the next policy committee meeting, because it was that, you got to remember, the focus was about quality teaching and what we're doing in the classroom to keep the garbage out of our schools so that we're focusing on what our kids need in order to be successful, because that was the whole point. I mean, intentionally, professionally, Mike's Mr. Dictionary and has a lot of great resources. We talked about some things. I'm going to be honest, I had some of the professional, what is our responsibility and how we're going to do that. So we added some keywords to not only support what teachers should be doing, but more importantly, help parents and students understand that we have an obligation to teach to the standards professionally. And I don't know, maybe we didn't quite get there, but I think it was still a good conversation.
Well, and I think, Randy, you said, you know, what's the sort of the list of issues that this might include? And I think that's hard to say, because it goes back to what Charles said about what's controversial or sensitive to one person might not be to someone else. But this first paragraph just defines controversial issues as problem subjects or questions about which there are significant differences of opinion and no easy resolution. So
That's the definition. And I don't think the intent of this policy is to say that we're going in to be controversial, but just that when these things arise, this is how we handle it. This is how we approach it, with talking about multiple sides to an issue and honoring that there are no easy or right answers to these questions that kids might ask when something happens in a piece of literature that elicits a discussion. I mean, I don't think that we're like saying, here's our list of all the controversial things that we're going to teach this year. That's not the point of this policy. It's that we are recognizing that there are things that are going to be controversial that will come up probably in literature, likely in social studies. And when that happens, our professional responsibility is to help kids see all sides of an issue without pressing our own opinions or expecting kids to accept what we believe uncritically, but that they are going to think critically about multiple sides of something.
So, Madam Chair, is there wording we could change? I mean, let's ask about the wording.
Madam Chair, I was one of the ones that asked about this, and I attended the policy meeting on this, and it was really great discussion, and I feel like with all the great minds, we came together and put a policy that was to the standards of what our teachers have to teach. I see this policy as protection for our students. I see this policy as protection for our parents when a child maybe comes home with something that, you know, your family or your person doesn't exactly jive with. And I also see it as protection as responsibility of our professional teachers. And I personally felt that the policy states that they're allowed to teach all issues, and just like Maggie said, it allows our kids to be critical thinkers on their own, and it's protecting them when they do think critically.
So, Maggie, as I reread this a couple different times, I don't know how you changed the wording. I want to have some protection for teachers, and so, Madam Chair, I'm going to call a question.
Controversial issues are to be presented with good judgment, keeping in mind the maturity and background of the student. If we're teaching to the standards, so now you're going to make a judgment and not teach to the standards if that's your judgment as the teacher, or how
shouldn't that word be in, maybe that word be in there?
I know that in black and white we're talking about teaching to the standards, but that's not what this is. And what this does is this allows a policy now written, and it allows to go outside the box. It allows to go outside the box to teach and slant and go in different directions than what you want to do. If you think that every teacher in our school district is teaching without any suggestion as to how they feel, then walk over to the high school and talk to some of the students over there. Because our teachers do it all the time. And so they're not non-biased in what they talk about and how they go about teaching. So when we give them a template that says by policy, we can now do this based on our judgment alone, I have an issue with that.
But it's not just now happening. I mean, we've had this policy.
Yes, I know. So my deal would be not to amend it, would be to get rid of it. If we're teaching just to the standards, teach to the standards. History is not controversial. History is history. I know everybody has an opinion, but something either happened or it didn't happen. Literature can be controversial, but the things that's usually controversial is whatever piece of literature that you're reading, which is the particular topics that I'm trying to bring attention to. Math is not controversial other than the Common Core stuff that we teach in nursing. It's not, this stuff is not controversial in its base. What becomes controversial when we start deciding how we're going to do it and what we do with it. So that's why, my opinion is we get ready.
We have conversation, but I'll take one more here.
Okay. Tell me how you see this playing out, Randy, without a policy. The teacher throws something out there. How many parents will it take to influence that teacher not to deal with this subject or not to deal with it in this particular way? I just don't understand how we can wrestle with all of this without any policy.
We have the policy right now, and it's not shaping anything the way that what I think all this does, that creates a boundary to allow them to continue to do whatever they want to do and teach whatever they want to teach. We keep going back to standards, but you can take standards and you can put a twist on it and you can add your own curriculum to it and it changes. That's what I have a problem with. And that's not to say that that's what's going on right now, but just like Dave said, in the years to come, these are going to be the things that we're talking about. What's controversial now and what's in the standards now may not be 2 years from now. Our legislature might decide that it's okay for our 6-year-olds to study gender. And I as a parent don't want my 6-year-old to be taught that stuff. I would like to teach them as a parent. So if we have it in our policy that it is now the teacher's responsibility and their choice alone, we had no say in it, parents had no say in it until after the fact, then I can't get behind that.
I guess my concern there is that the teacher doesn't have any control over it either. You're handcuffing the teacher.
But as far as what they're saying, they have to teach to the standards. They have a strict guideline of what they can and can't teach, and they don't go anywhere outside that box. So we don't have to worry about it.
It's how you shape things, though. Last year,
exactly,
we had a situation where after teaching To Kill a Mockingbird for 45 years, we had a principal come in and tell the teacher, "I don't think that's relevant. Don't teach it anymore." Hello, race isn't relevant today. One of those things. So, the teacher tiptoes around that issue.
You see what I'm saying? You can't have it both ways. You can't say that we stick strictly to the guidelines of the state standards. But then if you say, well, if we let them loose, or if we watch them too close, how are they going to be able to teach?
Okay, it's been called to question. So.
I don't even know how to
So you have a motion on the table to you to approve policy item B.
Do I have a motion? Okay, all those in favor of policy item B as written, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you, Randy. Motion passed, policy passed. And I would like to say, Randy and all of you, thank you. That's the way it's supposed to work.
Yes, I'm not trying to be that guy.
You're not. No.
No, I'm usually that guy.
No, you're not. Because that's why we're here. That's why we're here to hear all sides.
Yes, it's diverse. Chris's fault. Every time I sit in this chair, there's...
I get
smiled.
<It's, laughs>
and we're not making light of it, but... That's why we're here, and to talk about controversial issues.
But I also want to say it was a good conversation. But Randy, you can come in, schedule a meeting with
Mr. Miller, myself, we can show you some different things. We can bring principals in. We can kind of help answer those conversations. So it doesn't necessarily have to end tonight. There's still, if there's more things to answer, we're willing to answer those questions. So.
I've been assured that the garbage is not in the schools and going to be in the schools, but I've been assured of a lot of things in my life, and the problem that I have is that we do go by state guidelines, we do go by federal guidelines, and as soon as those things become written in stone, then that's something that we have to.
Okay, let's move on, and I would really like to have a meeting with Ms. Ross. Okay, Lynette, you have something to add?
Charles, you had said about the policy on standards. Maybe we should do that up. Just bring that forward. You know, you said there's some things online. Like.
So that's the book revision, that adoption of that. So standards is a whole other level. I mean, that's another retreat. So we can. There's a whole lot with that. So, but the ones I will work with Heidi and Maggie, and we'll move the opportunity to come up and challenge those. Yes.
Okay, moving on. May I have a motion to accept the classified sub pay proposal increase? May I have a motion.
So moved.
May I have a second?
Second.
Discussion.
So, Madam Chair, what you have in front of you is different than what was presented at the work session, so I need to be as transparent as I can. So in discussion with some other supervisors, instead of 50 cents below, we brought it up to, correct me if I'm wrong, it's the base salary. So that's what we're presenting in front of you.
And so, if you changed it, Charles, what is going to be the total cost of the district?
About $6,100.
So it upped it a little bit.
It upped it a little bit, but not a lot. So the new sheet's coming around. This one we just created.
No, it's already out.
No, it is. But on the bottom of the one we handed you, it says the 50 cents, but the difference is 50 cents of the base. I forgot to take that off.
So we can just cross it out.
So that bottom part will go away.
Okay. Mr. Austin, what is the certified sub pay now?
126. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the classified sub pay proposal, signify by saying aye.
Which one?
I'm sorry?
Which one? There's two proposals, the one with
the 50
cents or the one with the
base pay. The
base pay.
The base pay. Thank you. Sorry about that. Okay, let's vote again. All those in favor of the classified sub pay with base pay, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passed. Okay, we're to other business. Activity meeting update. Mr. Moon.
First of all, I'd like to thank Connie and Steve for crunching the numbers and the data that you have given the committee. This is a complex issue of all the activities and things like that, but it necessarily has to start with the money, and the huge element in the room is that we are way over the funding model, and Connie, the numbers that you've given us gave the whole committee a clear understanding that there are things in the budget that we just can't control. I mean, you have to pay officials what officials get. You know, and there are just all sorts of things that are locked in. The number that you gave us last time around that was particularly telling was that 60 to 65% of our activities budget is either salary or benefits. And so, in looking at what Connie and Steve have given us there,
we need to decide, you know, what things we just can't pare down because there's just no wiggle room there, and then concentrate on the things that we might be able to alter a little bit. And moving ahead, that's what the issue before us is right now. I'd also like to kind of put in a plug here as I, you know, move away from this, and somebody else will probably take over. There's an opportunity there for us to, on this committee, to really, really champion our activities if we just get the word out there. You know, I just picked out three different areas to consider when it comes to activities. There's the socialization that we struggled with during the COVID years, and activities provide that socialization. There's the grades. I mean, studies have been done over and over and over again. Kids who participate in activities get better grades than kids who don't. I mean, that's just a fact. And so when we are championing our activities, we need to mention that to the public. There's also the work ethic thing. You can go up and down the street, help wanted. We can't get kids to work anymore. They just, you know, they don't know how to work. Well, activities will teach them how to do that. And it'll teach them that the work they put in is beneficial to their teammates and everybody else around. The one point that I think we really ought to get out there is how much these activities cost us. I mean, we could take a poll right here, and we in this room have a little bit better understanding of the money issue than people on the street. But even with us right here, if I were to ask you, how much of our budget do you think we spend on activities? Not just one, not just athletics, but everything. The band, the athletics, Buffalo, KC.
Field trips.
How much of our budget do you suppose we spend on all of that, totally? I mean, we get 20%, we get 30%. You know, somebody would come out there with, well, we've got to spend 50% of our budget on that. You know, we spend on all of our activities combined 0.5%. And for that, I mean, you're getting the socialization, you're getting the work ethic, you're getting the better grades, and we just kind of need to champion that. So, granted, we're starting with the numbers because that elephant is right there in front of everybody in the community. But as we get beyond that, there are some other things we can do on that committee also. It's a good bunch. So if any of you, you know, are so inclined, you might want to consider jumping into that in another month or so.
So in the superintendent's report, I've included a link for the public to kind of look at some of the data that's been presented. We still haven't got the link available with the data that Steve and Connie presented, but there's a lot of great information there, just as an FYI to everybody. So it's called Activity Committee Information, which has several links. It shows you who put the link in and kind of gives you an idea of some of the things we are talking about.
Manager.
Yes.
So two questions. One is kind of a... Is a booster club type organization funding out? If we had a booster club that funded a significant portion of our activities budget, would that be legal?
As long as it's equitable,
you have to make sure. Right. If they just put it into one lump fund,
we just have to rely on them to fund certain things instead of taking money from them. That's a revenue thing. So there's a way of doing it. And booster clubs can be actively involved with supporting and probably absorbing some of the cost.
And those could be sponsored by.
So, yeah.
Yeah, we've had them for years, believe it or not, called the Bison Backers. And at one time, I forget how much money they had actually given back to the school. They did a lot of the science camps, travel for them, the cost. They were very active, but it's getting those people who are willing to work. We used to put on a huge banquet. One year we raised over close to $30,000 in one evening. But it's so much work, and those people have kind of gone away, retired, moved away, and now to find another group of people who are that active, it's tough.
Well, that leads me to, do we have anything at our disposal to be able to, I know you said it's in a link, but nobody's clicking on that
link. Just to break it to you, can we just put it in the newspaper or something like that?
Do we have something within our scope to be able to say we're going to use X amount of dollars to advertise what's going on?
So I think that's something. So we do. I talk with Ryan all the time at the newspaper at 307.net, so we have some things. But as the activity committee makes some potential recommendations, we can put more out to the community at that board. But right now, it's just the data piece that they're looking at.
Yeah, and that's where I think that is kind of where we might be able to start opening some eyes and getting some more people that might look at it and say we want to get involved. And if we put that that call to say here's what we're dealing with, here's what we would like to do, who's on board with it?
It is true. The Bison Backers have a tax exempt number. They, as far as I know, they're still a quasi organization. I don't think they're active, but I don't know.
So, yeah, we continue, and that's my intent is to continue to be as open as we can.
And so, as I asked Mike, we spend about $1.2 million of our budget on activities and sports. Just to put the number out there, that's about what it is.
Okay. Transportation discussion.
All right, so I'm going to turn this over to Connie, but in front of you, there are two sheets, bus driver salaries, and then I see a cost to insure part-time JCD employees. So I just want to let you know that there's been a lot of conversation since our work session last week, all right? The intent of tonight is to kind of bring you up to speed and potentially get some more direction. But Connie just kind of talked about, there's a lot of work here. So anyway, talk about what has been brought to the table and kind of where we're moving forward from your point of view. Sure.
So the first sheet that is says cost to insure part-time JCSD. So we kind of have two different discussions, the insurance and the and just kind of the salary piece. Dave talked about and asked about the insurance. And so we had a conversation, had a meeting with insurance today. We can move that down to 20 hours a week. If we chose to do that, we have about 16 employees that are part-time. And so that would affect them. So if we did exactly what we are offering, the 30 to 40 hour a week employees for insurance, it would cost us about $150,000 additional funds, and about 90 of that would be reimbursable through SPED and transportation. So if we chose to charge 25% more for a 20 hour a week employee versus a 30-hour week employee, it would cost us about $113,000, and of course, almost 68 of that is reimbursable. And then again, it's the 20%. So if we charge them 20% more than what we charge a regular employee, it would cost us $120,000, and we could get about 72 of that reimbursed through transportation and SPED. So that's kind of the cost on that. one of the things that we taught, there's lots of consequences to going and offering 20-hour employees insurance. So one of the things I didn't even think about is the market exchange, the Obamacare that's out there, that I don't think it's ACA is out there, and you can get on the market and get insurance. So they were talking today that a family that makes about $60,000 can go on the exchange and get free insurance, right? So if we offer affordable health care for our 20-hour employees, then they just got kicked out of that insurance. They're not qualified for that. It may be awesome insurance, it may be working great for them, but as soon as we offer it, they lose that. So we talked about that, and there's a stop loss carrier too in our insurance. So let's say I have a claim of $500,000. The trust picks up $250,000 of that, and then the rest is picked up by that stop loss carrier because we pay insurance. The trust pays insurance to that company, and it doesn't go against our experience and our claims experience. And then, so if it's added to us, then our insurance rates go up really high. So that's that. So they talked about the possibility of reducing it to 20 hours a week in January. They've talked to the stop loss carrier, but it's not recommended, but they would work with us, right? But they would have to make all these decisions in November because November is open enrollment. So there's just no way we can really look at what it's going to be costing us as a district, the ramifications if we do this, what happens if we do that. So pushing it to January 1 may be just not a really good idea. So we can do it at July when the plan renews. We're hoping that they will come and sit down with us and look at all our plans and looking to see if we're doing the best for the district and for the employees. So my recommendation is that we would wait to do that till July 1.
They would move on this, though, before that and give approval for us to do that transfer, if that's what you want to do, but then transfer to this new policy or protocol would be July 1st.
And they had some really good ideas on how we can structure that, so we really like to take the time to really look at that and structure that well.
This is Blue
Cross Blue Shield. Mm-hmm.
So what you've shown us here is it's about $50,000 out of pocket if you went with it. Is that, am I, did I
yes.
do that math? Right?
Yeah.
Now, this is just for the bus riders, though,
right? No, this is 16 for every. We felt like if we're going to offer it to the business, the bus drivers, we need to offer it across the board.
Oh, you have to.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So your recommendation is to let you keep investigating.
Yes. I did not get back. I've had several calls into WDE. I haven't got back to whether or not we can do a stipend, whether we can do any kind of bonus type thing, sign on or anything like that. We're still working on that information, and I don't have that for you.
And so, Connie, I agree with you on all that. But as we lose bus drivers, we've got to come up with a solution.
Right.
And you know that we passed this sub salary increase, and that's okay. But like I said, we've got to come up with something because I think we're going to maybe have two going out because of surgeries or something.
Right. So as soon as I find out from WD what we can, what's legal in doing those things, I can bring that back to the table. Because we could possibly, you know, do a little stipend for insurance until July. So, but that's a possibility. So the second piece of this is just a snapshot. We were asking, you know, what was our so we have 9 current drivers now. We have 3 vacancies. The average daily actual time spent on the bus is 3.8 hours. So and then we do the guaranteed time, and that's 4.38. The average weekly actual time is 19.38 hours per week, and then the average that we pay is 22.62 hours. The hourly rate in 23, the average is $20.03. The route driver average estimated in 22 was $19.30. And I don't exactly know what she put on this on the 21, so I'm going to leave that off, and I'll tell you what that is here in a little bit. And then some guaranteed route and guaranteed. So we guarantee some drivers sometimes, and we talked about going to $100 an hour for 5 hours of, and so that's just those that money there. If we just paid what they worked, it would have been it cost us $211,000 with rate, wages, and benefits. And then with the guaranteed rate, we actually paid $230,000. So that's kind of what was the snapshot of what's going on there. Any questions about this particular sheet of paper?
So the 9 route drivers, is that's including Casey's routes, and then the 3 vacancies, where are those?
We had routes here in Buffalo that were not running this year because they were, in town, and so those are the ones we are not running. So if we can get
those 3, routes,
that's if we can put the routes back in. Yeah.
So we have all of our routes going to Casey's.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So the recommendations I made for the $100 a day for 5 hours, and then anything over 5 hours was $20 an hour, I wasn't far off of what we're paying with the average, the guaranteed time, which is 4.3. So I wasn't too far off on that. But it was just a suggestion to try to get people, sometimes when they see that, I know it isn't fair to the ones that are only driving 2 or 3 hours, but let's say somehow we've got to come up with something to get people. And having said that, as people's 401ks go down, you know, get $1 million in there and you're 65, now it's down to 300 some thousand, and maybe that will get people to say, you know what, I'm getting a little scared, maybe I better go get a part-time job. So maybe we'll keep our fingers crossed. I don't want anybody's 401ks to go down, but they have, and so maybe that will help to get some people interested in some part-time work.
I don't
want to be down in my 401k. Wouldn't that be nice? So the next one is the bus salary schedule.
Well, I mean, I think it's probably going into that same thing.
Okay.
I think with everything that you're talking about, I don't know that we're not trying to fix a problem that it doesn't really have a real solution based on our workforce that's here by, you know, adding $1 an hour or something like that. I think it's definitely a citywide problem, it's a countywide problem, statewide, nationwide. And so I don't know that there's this is awesome that you put all this stuff together. I'm not trying to discuss it. I'm just saying I don't know that there is a package that we can put together that will deliver us drivers. And frankly, if we're only 3 drivers short right now, I haven't heard a single complaint about routes not being driven this year. I think because everybody is well aware of the situation that we're in. And that's not, again, not to downplay the status of what transportation is doing right now. I just don't know that we're in a position that we need to move mountains to offer what we don't necessarily need to offer.
Some of it might be a situation of retention, too, not losing the ones we have. You know, if they're on the verge for different circumstances.
And I'm just going to put a form in for the teachers. We've got to put something on the base. We have to. We need to keep the ones we have. That's fine.
So just kind of to start the conversation, it's not really making any recommendations or anything. So some of these schools we found their salary schedule, so that's kind of why we chose that. But I also chose Gillette, Cheyenne, and Casper, just so we can see where we kind of line up. So it looks like of the 14 that I chose to look at, we're number 6. and our salary and the hourly wage that we offer. The blue down below are some of the ideas that we came up with. It's just, and they're just ideas. So we were looking at the average route, which a four-hour day instead of a five-hour day would be a $25 an hour base. And then when we pulled it across, it ended up being $35.32 at the end. So that was kind of high. Maybe hard to defend and justify when you're looking at everybody else's salary on that. We looked at 19, and then we just bumped it up to the 20 just to see, and just because it's nice to say $20 an hour. So we looked at 19 and 20. So that's kind of what it would end up looking like. And I don't have the sheet. I forgot it. But we have one person at the very end of the salary schedule, so he's maxed out. We have two on step two and step three, and then the others are kind of in between there. So for the majority of the drivers, they have plenty of room to grow and continue to make a good wage. But those are just, this is just information only, just data, no recommendation. So you kind of see where we land. I couldn't get Warland's because there's not online, so I'm going to call Charlie and try to get that tomorrow, and we can keep adding to this. And if there's any schools that you specifically want to look at, I can put that on there as well. So,
can you remind me on how progression from one step to another goes?
So we are doing 2.5%. So
well, how do you get from 2 to 3?
By being here another year. So
okay, but I want to clarify that. That's not necessarily true, because if you freeze or you don't give salary advancements, you might have been here for 5 years and the district froze three out of those 5 years, you're still going to be on step two. So there's always, and we're in that discussion, that steps equate to years of service, and it does not, because it all depends on the history prior to that. It depends on the salary schedule prior to that. It's not, and I want to make that public comment, just because we will give a step in a lane when we say that, that's because of a year of service. There's history. So somebody has been here 20 years, they might still only be on step 12, is because you go back in history, it's either they moved in, moved out, or the district froze salaries at a certain point in time, or there was a change in salary schedule of where they aligned. So we got to be very careful that we don't emphasize that years are related to steps. So
minimum.
Yes.
And so how we put them on the schedule this time, we took last year's salary schedule and said they're on step 5, which is $19. We went to the new schedule, and we disregarded the step. We looked on the new schedule as to where it's closest to the $19. So maybe it was $19.08. So we would put them on the $19.08, and then we added a step is how they got placed. So some of them lost steps.
But they didn't lose salary.
Not at all. And with some of the conversations we had today were, you know, the new people coming in are making just about the same amount. And so that was the consequence of the schedule. We had lots of good stuff that happened with the schedule. We spread it out. The steps were increased. So in 5 years, the Band-Aid's going to be completely off, and we're not going to have that issue.
So a couple things, Madam Chair, if I can kind of point out on the salary schedule, because this is super good questions today with transportation. But I want to show that every district does something a little bit different. Obviously, you see where Buffalo stands. Torrington's right up there at $22.89, and they kind of go across to get, so they're one of the highest. But Sheridan, that's Sheridan 2. So when you see Sheridan, that is Sheridan 2. And the next one is Gillette. You have Cheyenne, and you have Ranchester, which is actually Sheridan 1. But when you go across and you look at the steps, I'm going to use a great example. If you look at Ranchester or Sheridan 1, they start out at 1805. They're a little bit higher than us. And they do go all the way out to step 25.
Oh, no, they go to 40. I just didn't add it.
But the reality is already we are $2 ahead of them by the time you get to step 15. So some of these salary schedules that go all the way out, our salary schedule gets our employees to a higher number quicker than most salary schedules, and in that, just having that conversation. So if you go to the one below it, 1780, Douglas Max is out at there. They're not even close to our step 15. So just because they have more steps doesn't necessarily mean that they're advancing their salaries quicker or higher. So that's part of what EMS come in, is how do we incentivize people that are here. I know it's hard to see, but this just really shows you the complexity of, hey, well, I know they go clear to here, but we need to look at how quick it moves. It also shows you where we're competing. With the exception of Torrington, you got Sheridan One and Gillette are right there, which are very large, an economy of scale. We're nowhere near that. With economy of scale, a $100 million budget, we're not a $100 million budget. What that looks like. But those other schools below, it kind of shows that we are being kind of competitive where we are. So I just want you to look at this information as you give recommendations, and we will follow whatever direction the board wants us to do.
Are some of these other schools, though, like Casper being the lowest, do they offer benefits to part-time?
That I don't know. So probably not. I would gather that they don't. There's just a few districts that do cover.
Okay. I just wondered if there were some differences like that, where maybe some of these are paying lower, but they are offering benefits.
And I can double check on that too, just so for that information.
And Chris, one thing to keep in mind is for bus drivers, the benefits would be reimbursed.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you for all your hard work.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
So, Jan, as a recommendation from the board, I mean, what further direction? I mean, we're going to meet with the insurance company. We can give you an overall total cost to the district if we were to do some of these things. Are we headed in the right direction, or are you as a board, what more information would you like?
I think you're headed in the right direction. I just did not understand that. I mean, we could be doing something very detrimental to somebody by kicking them out of affordable care. And so let me ask you, make sure I have this right. If we offer 20 for benefits, that automatically?
So we have to offer it at an affordable price. So it has to be 9.125% of their household income. So even things that we don't even have any control over. Since we offer our least costly insured single at $3,500 deductible, the high deductible plan, we give that as free. There's no cost, so it's affordable. So anybody that works 30 hours is not eligible for that for the exchange. So there's one thing you can do a little bit. So the government sets that 9.125. So maybe we set ours at 9.175. So it's just a few dollars more, but it doesn't meet the government's definition of affordable care, but it's still affordable. And then since we're not offering affordable care, then they're not ineligible for that exchange. So there's some things that we might be able to do, but it's just going to take some time to really look at that.
Yeah, so you need time to investigate it, because when you file your taxes, they will determine the 9.125 whether you're eligible or not. And so you probably haven't had time to talk to the employees to see if it would actually kick anyone out. Yeah, and so you need time. And so I appreciate what you put forward here so we can look at it. Shows me that we're at least going down a path that, you know, we're trying to come up with some kind of a solution. So
okay.
I appreciate that.
So we'll continue down the path, and you tell us when you're ready.
Okay. And we're having as much trouble getting food service workers as we're getting transportation. So it's
probably
not the
problem. Did you get any?
I have no applicants, correct, Heidi?
We also have problems getting paraprofessionals. We didn't have very many applicants for teaching positions this year either.
Well, I think that's kind of what my
what my point was, that the, you know, we're trying to save the world.
And we'll have coaches
for that. Not to say anything negative for the bus drivers, but we're trying to save the world to fill the bus driving positions. And
we can't even get coaches. All right, let's move on. November 14th work session will be November 9th. Anything else?
Pack your excitement, because we've got a lot to present that night. We have a facility review. We're talking about school report cards. We're talking about data. So everything that we've added here tonight, I just wanted you to know that work session is going to be loaded with lots of information, and it probably won't be a 45-minute meeting. So.
Thank you.
What's that?
And elections
I'll send
are
calendar
what
invite
day?
Tomorrow.
What day is the election day?
Usually I get a letter because I don't want to be here.
Eighth.
Okay. That's why we're going to have a work session after. All right.
Oh, wait.
You planned that, huh?
No, I did not.
Wait. But isn't our regular meeting here, our work session here?
I just had to know a question.
Sorry, I gave you wrong dates earlier.
All right. May I have a motion to go into executive session per Wyoming Statute 16-4-405?
So moved.
Second?
Okay.
All those in favor, signify by saying aye. All right. All the same sign. We are now going to be entering the executive session. Thank you, everyone, for coming.